I have some from my friend Sharon, who used to sell shots on Bourbon Street
Oh,
in one of
nice.
her eras. She
Very
was a shot
nice.
girl, which sounds terrible, but
I cannot imagine being a shot girl, but she
on Bourbon Street.
on Bourbon Street, no.
Arguably, like the booziest street
In the world.
ever. I don't know
Yeah.
any other, right? Like,
I
yeah.
don't know.
You've not been to New Orleans, no.
I have not been to New Orleans because you are supposed to take me.
I will. New Orleans was made for Christy and Leah. They didn't know it at the time, but it was certainly made for us. Although I'm liquor weak, and it really prides itself on that, so we'll have to
Yeah,
take it. We'll
I
have to eat
know.
lots of beignets beforehand.
I am gonna tell you, I feel like I'm gonna get real drunk tonight on this drink that we've been drinking.
Yeah. So guys, happy Ash Wednesday, but instead of doing that, we decided to do a Mardi Gras theme because that was
We're Mardi
yesterday.
Grahing it up. Welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where
Welcome to Theology on the Rocks.
we have actual drinks on the rocks today.
Laissez le bon temps brûler, yeah.
Woo-hoo!
It sounds better when you've drank one of these. Let the good times roll.
So cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to this. We're having hurricanes.
We're having a hurricane.
You
And if
have
you've
a
been to
hurricane
Pat
glass.
O'Brien's, which is very touristy, but sometimes you just got to. Woo! Lord!
Yeah.
That's why people throw up so much on that street.
I'm gonna get
But
so
see, it's
drunk.
not, but it's also not bad
It's
at
not, it's
all.
very tasty. I don't think I did it entirely correct, but it is very tasty, and
I followed the recipe except for the grenadine.
I'm not mad about it. Well, here's an admission I'm about to tell the world. You know that like little cocktail set that I think we both have with the shaker and all the stuff, you know, the
Yeah, like,
like
yeah.
bits and pieces. And there's that little, it's the shot thing where there's like the one side is a little bit bigger than the other side. You know what I'm talking
I
about?
vaguely know what you're talking about on that one.
So, you know, when the recipe calls for like 1 ounce, 2 ounces,
Right.
I don't know how big that is.
When
So, I don't know which of
you
those.
text me and Stuart tells me it's a little more, how much is 30 ounces? I'm like, he's like a little more than a US shot. It's like a British shot. So
Well, so what I ended up doing was just kind of following my heart. So it's either,
your heart what orange juice looks like.
it's either very boozy or it's not very boozy. And I added
Right.
extra orange juice because I got nervous because I feel like there might be a lot of booze in here.
Yeah. Well, it's two like mega shots of rum of different persuasions. So
Yeah. So we've got a lot of rum. No, ma'am.
we will put the recipe up, but yeah, so we're drinking these and I'm drinking it from the sundial glass, which looks a lot like the glass when we go and get a hurricane. They will come in glasses like this. But
It
this is
does. It looks.
actually in Atlanta. It's a restaurant, I'm sure very similar in other cities, but it's that sort of spherical building in it down in Atlanta. But it has like a it's a bar that goes around
Oh,
that like
okay.
rotates and you can like see out because it's like glass like floor to ceiling. Anyway, my parents got engaged there.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
lovely.
so I took Stuart there, and when you order, like a $40 drink, they give you a free glass.
It's true, they do. I have a lot of free plastic glasses. I don't have any nice like that. That's a
Well,
good.
they should do that based on what you pay. But yeah, so I happy Lent now. Well,
Happy, yeah, like we're entering into the Lenten season. Oh my goodness.
We truly are, but but today we are still Mardi Gras in our
Yeah.
heads. So
We decided to live in the past for a one day
for
past.
most things, really. Since we're going 1950s in America, we might as well go there in our
I mean,
lives.
are we going, or is it like 1939 Germany happening? I think it might be 1939 Germany.
It's not going well. Sure
Not
ain't
going well.
going well. North Carolina's people always said things like, oh my God, they're going to try to prevent women from voting. North Carolina actually is passing, or well, no, let me back up. North Carolina has put forth something that's like, or no, lie, Georgia. It was Georgia because my parents and I are trauma bonding right now. In Georgia, they put forth a thing about, like, it's going to affect women who change their names when they get married, basically.
Because of
them being able to vote because of the name changes and things like that. I don't know that it'll go through, but, like, mom was like, are we going to not be able to vote anymore? And I was like, you need to move to North Carolina, like, right now.
I mean, they would prefer that none of us vote is what they're trying to do to stop people from voting.
Even though I grew up in the South and I know, like, voter suppression is real, like, I think in my head I was silly and foolish and thought we were far beyond that. And I know it's, like, we have it here, like, with polling stations and stuff, like, racism still exists in polling, I didn't think that we were going to go full, like, legislative backwards.
I know. I didn't actually think that it was going to, I mean, I knew it was going to eventually come for the white women too. I just didn't know it was going to be so fast. Yeah. But it's just like all women.
It's breakneck right now.
We're done with women voting generally. Although I'm not married, so my last name is the same, but, like, I have never set eyes on my birth certificate. I don't think. I have no idea where that is.
I didn't change my name, so
yeah.
I first saw what was happening. No, it just seemed like a lot of work, and I liked my last name, so I was like, "That's."
I mean, good job. In hindsight,
yeah.
Good job,
who'd have thunk?
Good job, Leslie, for being lazy.
My feminist laziness is what I'll call it. Meant that I will be able to vote now. Yeah, and I have my birth certificate, but it's just because of the immigration stuff we had to do. So I had to, my mom sense. Had it in a safe, which is fair. And I want her to, for based on how much I moved, that was a super fair place to put it. Yeah, but I did eventually need it.
I think that it's probably, my mom for sure has it somewhere. She's a hoarder. She has everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, again, I've never seen it.
You've never seen your birth certificate ever?
Not that I remember. I feel like maybe, but I don't have any memory of it. I'm sure
you didn't get a passport, don't you? Yeah, you have to have your birth certificate to get a passport.
But see, I got my passport when I was a teenager, so I feel like my mom probably did most of that.
Didn't let you look at it. Kathy was like, she can't look at it. She's not responsible enough to look at it. She didn't want you to touch it.
Like, I assume I saw it then. I just don't have, because, you know, my mom was probably, like, filling out the forms and just, like, took me places. It was like, here.
That was for the best. I think, like, I didn't even really want it. It was only when they made me get it. Yeah. Mom was like, do you want the, and I was like, I really don't, mom. I feel much better with you having it, but
yeah.
They are making me be an adult. Years old, I have to.
42 years old, you have to do your own adult thing.
I have to do my own stuff. And I'm like, no, mom, I don't really want to.
I don't like it. I mean, I'm gonna make her keep it because we all know I can't. A hurricane might take my house out, so I don't want it.
The drink?
The drink or the real weather.
True, you're not in a very safe zone. We had tornadoes today.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Those are my
top, I don't like any of it. Can I tell you a funny story that's completely unrelated, but I've just been cracking up about
only
it
if it's actually funny.
So
tread lightly.
It's a failure. The internet.
I can still hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
So my friend Carla's birthday is today, and happy birthday, Carla. But when I was going to find a proper Facebook post for her birthday, what I discovered is because we are OG Facebook people. Oh no,
we'll never get to hear the story about Carla because Christy just froze. And Christy's completely gone, and that's okay because I'll entertain you. Christy's internet's been on the fritz. I'm gonna guess what the story about Carla is. So Stuart's birthday is tomorrow. So she's March 5th, and then Stuart's March 6th. I'm a Cancer, and come to find out, water signs together are actually pretty good. I'm not, like, super big into this whole thing, but, like, I do kind of like it when it works out for me. And Stuart's a water sign, so it's, like, and it's very, like, true, the course. Like, he's easy breezy, like, he's a fishy in the water. Hey, I was telling a story about Pisces.
Good.
While you're
my internet completely shut down.
Your friend Carla's a Pisces as well. And I was saying, water signs actually go really well together, both in friendship and relationships. Christy and I both are Cancers. Yes. So
hence,
water signs are good for us. And so it makes kind of sense because I'm a crab. I'm a July Cancer, which, you know.
Same. Yeah. I mean, I think that this is very true of Carla and I also, because only Carla could have put up with me for all of these years. We've been friends since college, as I was trying to say, and we're gonna finish this episode, and I'm gonna.
Go I was gonna to make up the story after I talked about the Pisces. I was gonna make up Carla's story.
Here's who Carla very is.
I don't know who she is, but it's gonna be very hurricane induced.
I like that.
So I'm glad you came back when you did.
I like that. So Carla and I met in college, and you probably also remember this, but because we were OG Facebook people, back in the very earliest days, when you wrote on somebody's wall, you couldn't just comment on that post. You had to like go right on the other person's wall. So do you remember this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So
I'm very old.
So a lot of, when you go back in your Facebook memories, a lot of the posts or a lot of the memories that I have with some of my college friends are like obviously parts of conversations, but I can only see what I wrote on their wall. I can't see what they, or like I can see what they wrote on my wall or something. I can't remember. Anyway, so it's Carla's birthday and I was going to find something to put up like a memory or something. And I found this post. I just want to read you the last line of this post, or the last like sentence of this post. Okay. I said, if we were to become friends again, and if Carla were to give me a gift, or she gave me a gift. No, this sentence doesn't make any sense. If Carla were to give me a gift,
ooh, it's already hitting.
Or I gave her a gift, I would imagine neither of us would exchange said gift for a semi-pornographic leering monkey lamp. What? What was 2008, Christy, talking about?
What's a semi-pornographic monkey lamp?
I don't know. This is such a problem. I have
that was very specific for you not to know.
It feels like we saw something. I asked Carla. We asked Jen. None of us remember. Carla thinks maybe it has to do with Gilmore Girls, but none of us have any like real memory of this semi-pornographic leering monkey lamp. And it's really
well, fun. Guys. You helped us solve the mystery of plugging the car in. Shout out to our listener. We put up his post and he was like, no, that makes total sense. And here's why. So maybe you can help us solve this mystery too.
Where did I see a pornographic leering monkey?
I mean, the only thing I can think of is if it was Gilmore Girls is that the friend's mom has the shop, but that's about all.
Maybe. I mean, I know she had a monkey lamp. I just don't remember it being semi-pornographic. It feels like a lot for Gilmore Girls, you know?
It does, but also you grew up is this in your evangelical days or your...
This is 2008. I would have been a normal person by then.
You've got to tell me. I didn't know you back then. I don't know what your timeline is.
I think I was not a total prude in 2008. I don't think that it would have been like...
Because it could just be like a monkey going like this with its eyes shut and you being like, oh my gosh, what is it not seeing? I don't know. That's funny. So mine are the ones, because we used to on Facebook as well, because we were so cool, we used to be like, Leah Robinson is blah, blah, blah on your status. Yeah. Like you would just be like, and mine are always related to Ireland for some reason. Listeners, I did my field work in Ireland, but also I lived there for a year in Belfast. And mine, I don't know. Well, actually, I do know what happened. A lot of things.
I bet I know what happened.
I think I went into like some sort of schism in terms of my personality because my updates are always so unhinged. Like they're like, woke up in the gutter and have a four-leaf clover tattoo on my face. Like, I don't know. It was just, like, you would think they're all drunken, but sometimes they're not drunken. It's just like, bought a chicken at the store and the man said I look like Audrey Hepburn or something. Yes. Like, which
this is,
it's just like all of these, like, but it's like a collection of at least three events in one status. Yes. And then I split my toe and lost a shoe. Like, it, and I just was like, who was looking at this and didn't reach out to see?
No, because we were all posting the same thing. It was like,
We were all in the glitter with shamrock tattoos and busted toes.
We were all posting. We were all posting like three completely unrelated, fairly unhinged things, and it was because it would say like Christy Whaley is, and so you would just like fill the rest of the sentence in, and
sometimes it's just lyrics to stuff that I don't remember is. Just, you know,
lyrics.
We'll cross the void for you, or I will walk into the dark for you, or some death cap lyric or something. And I'm like, Jesus, how did no one ever reach out?
There's a lot of lyrics about smoking in mine, and I have never been a smoker. I've never smoked.
I think that's what I mean. It's like the stuff doesn't make, it isn't me. It's why I think I schismed somewhere. Like, it's not even like drunk, sober, studious versions of myself. It just feels like I left my body and became like another human. And I guess maybe I did. Because honestly, if you know me, you know that I probably was doing what I was saying. Like, I'm not always good at everything, but I'm usually good about saying what I really think to a point of unfriendship. In some cases. So, like, I know that this was happening. Right. Exactly. I just, like, don't understand what marshmallows and shoes and bagpipes, like, what does all of this have to do with one another?
I know. I mean, it's an assortment of just trying to piece together all of the things. Because, again, like, a lot of it, you get, like, what you wrote or what somebody else wrote on yours, but you're not getting the other side of that. And so you're just like, what?
And it says nothing. This, like, if you were like, what was she doing on this day? God knows.
Who could know? My FBI agent definitely doesn't know what I was doing in the early 2000s. Right?
We should call, what's his face? Who's the guy that does the Da Vinci Code? We should call him up and just be like, could you please figure out what we were doing?
Could you come interpret millennials' Facebook statuses from like 2006 to like 2010?
Someone could write a whole PhD on that. Just tell us what you're actually doing in these comments.
Plus,
because I sure don't know.
Because also, I think there was a lot more safety involved in it back then because you had to be a college student, right? So, like, you had to have that college student email address. You mostly are only friends with people you actually know in real life. And you know your parents or, like, anyone else, your bosses, et cetera, cannot see this. Like, this is not just like it is now, just like out accessible in the world. And so we could.
But instead of embracing that freedom, we acted like we were under criminal investigation.
We were like real cagey. I'm not going to tell you anything, but I am going to post this format lyric.
Right. Like, now you'll just be like, I went out, got hammered, and slept with a harem of men. And people are like, oh my gosh, you just told everybody. But back then it was like, just lyrics to Neutral Milk Hotel. It's like, God, Leah, what was that? Why didn't you embrace the time that you had?
I mean this so sincerely, but like, there are a few reasons that I'm still on Facebook, but really one of them is because looking back at the memories is just the most hilarious thing. Like,
it's the same for me. I like would be off it if not for it. There's three reasons. The pictures I have there or that other people have of me that I want to see, memories, and then my book group that's still on Facebook, even though we talk like most days, so we don't need to be on Facebook, but for some reason that's where the invites come from. Are you here or did you die? Oh no, Christy's gone again. She's making me drink these hurricanes by myself. Yeah, she's gone. Well, listeners, we found out Carla's story. My story was going to be far more interesting. It was going to involve a lot of international espionage and various other things. But I guess we just have reverted to Facebook posts. So today we are going to talk about, because we are in this Lenten season, we are going to talk today about rituals, rites and rituals, and what those things mean to us as religious people. So, hey, again, I just introduced what we were talking about today. Rites and rituals. Yeah, and I can talk. I'm a teacher. I can go on. I have no shame when it comes to this.
We're going to catch up. It's fine.
Yeah. and what those things mean to us, or maybe what they don't mean to us, actually. And so I will say that I'm going, as a little plug, I am going to the American Academy of Religion. I am currently president-elect of the Southeastern version of that, and I will be in Miami this weekend. So if you are in that region, you should sign up to be a part or do a paper, or if you are a professor and have students, encourage them to do that with whatever region you might be a part of. However, what I will say, big AAR did message all the people that are on the executive board.
Oh yeah.
And I won't reveal for confidentiality what was said. It was all encouraging and nice. But there was a woman from the mothership that basically emailed and said she couldn't come. But she said, I'm so glad that you're not having to deal with what your Midwestern brethren are dealing with. Because they had 14 inches of snow.
Oh, geez. Oh.
The weekend, like this last week or theirs.
Yeah.
And we're in Miami. And I was like, and then there was just a little palm tree emoji. And I was like, the Southeast is the right, you know, we can't always brag about our history, but at we least can at least brag the about the weather. Yeah.
No, I remember when I was in the Rocky Mountain region, which is primarily, it's like Utah, Wyoming, Colorado, and Nebraska. It's the only bit I remember. And like every...
You tell me, I don't know.
Every annual meeting was just in Colorado because nobody wanted to go to the other states. It'd be like,
it's in Denver this year, I can confirm.
It's always. One year it was in Omaha, and we were all like, oh, really?
No offense to anyone in Omaha. Ours, like, circle around, but it's always, by spring break, which is when it is, it's already, it's spring. Like, spring has sprung. It's going to be 80-something degrees in Miami.
Oh.
Like, it's. And here it's like 70 something. So like we've definitely like turned a corner, which is fantastic.
I mean,
but
mostly
I'm putting forth a program unit for, I've called it Rita's, and I put a little margarita symbol in my proposal. I think will go down very well. And religion in the American South. And then hopefully try to bump it up to, big AR. But the reason that I'm plugging that, but I'm also connecting it to the rites and rituals thing, which is that growing up in the Southern Baptist Church, it was, I don't want to say anti-ritual, but it was certainly ritual suspicious.
Yes.
And I think it was because they equated, we didn't even do the calendar. I didn't learn the church calendar until I was ordained in the Disciples, because they used the church and the colors and everything. Like, we didn't do any of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, we celebrated, like, Easter and Christmas, but, like, even holidays were, you really had to, I mean, it wasn't that we didn't celebrate, we weren't, like, whatever that group is that doesn't do holidays, but, like, we were very intentional that it was Jesus-centered holidays. And, like, I have to think there's some sort of, like, anti-Catholic sentiment in that, or at least, Catholic suspicion, like, not wanting it to be too Catholic.
I mean,
what about you growing up? Growing up, I know in our incarnations as adults, it's different.
Yeah.
Growing up, how was it?
Growing up, because we switched churches so much, like we were, I would say the longest we were ever in one church was maybe 5 years at a time. And that was super rare. That was like one or two churches, maybe. So when I was growing up, ritual almost didn't exist because we were never in the same place. Like we couldn't form a ritual because there wasn't a way to do that except for in the family. So we had like some kind of mishmash of family rituals that we would do, but I didn't associate it with church really at all until I, as an adult, kind of looked around and realized that other people had things that they were doing, like Lent, like people would do Lent. And I was like, I didn't even know this was a thing. You know, this was so very off of my radar until about seminary, really. And
people would tell me they were giving up stuff for Lent. And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah. I was like, I really thought only Catholics did it. And so it was just like, it was so distant from me. So I was like, you know, here's this friend of mine at my Protestant seminary, evangelical seminary, that is like, well, I'm giving something up for Lent. And I was like, why? and then I think because I felt like there was this disconnect because I hadn't had that, I was like, I'm going to be all about it. And so I went really hardcore into Lent for a while, but I will say that I did not do it with the right intentions. Like it wasn't really like,
what do you mean by that? Like it was more about telling people, like how people criticize the dry January people.
It was a little bit also I just wanted to do what everybody else was doing, you know, like okay. They were all giving stuff up. And so I was like, okay, I'll give something up too. I didn't want to be left out of the conversation, or I was a little bit ashamed too of like, people would say like, oh, you're not giving anything up. And I would feel like a bad Christian, but I didn't, not because I actually thought like, oh, this is a real thing I need to do. It's just like almost FOMO, you know?
Yeah. Some youngest child bullshit is. But I get it, actually. Religion is, even if you are an oldest child, it can definitely make you feel like, because I felt like that. I think when I first started hearing about it, I was like, wait. Like, we didn't do this. I don't know what it's happening. Yeah. Why are we?
Yeah.
Although now I've gotten over that, you'll be happy to know. And it's pure selfishness. No deconstruction, just pure selfishness. And disciples theology.
I have, that means I hope. Yeah, I have kind of, I mean, obviously, I like rituals. I think I'm a little bit more prone to certain kinds of rituals than others. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I did, I kind of came to one year, I did a very intense Lent where I only drank water. I ate food. It wasn't like a fast, but like no coffee, no alcohol, no orange juice, nothing. Girl. It was just water.
Girl, you gotta have one or the other. I couldn't have survived dry January without coffee.
It was rough. It was, yeah. It was, and I did it one year successfully, and then I tried to do it a second time, and I did not make it the second time. But it was,
what year was this? This is another one of those years you and I wouldn't have been friends.
No, this was when I was in seminary. It was something that there was a group, and I can't remember who it was. I almost want to say it was Jars of Clay. That band. But there was a...
I had Jesus Freak, the book. Is that Jars of Clay?
Yeah, that was CC Talk. But same. There was an organization where essentially you were supposed to give up drinking anything except for water. And then the money that you would have spent on those liquids, you would donate and they would build wells or something in Africa. I don't know. It was one of those, you know.
Well, to be fair, what you spent on, you're kind of a Starbucks fanatic. So that may have been actually.
Yeah, helpful. It was. I mean, it was money. It wasn't like $5 or anything. I did end up donating like nothing extravagant. I was in seminary, so it wasn't like I was out there getting Starbucks every day. But like it was an amount. And
it was like a
decent amount. I don't remember how much, but it was the first year I felt like I was doing something that meant something that time. And I think that was the first time it meant something to me. It was like, not just I'm doing it because everybody is doing it, but there was like a reason or a like good motivation behind it.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think too, and for those of you maybe that didn't grow up in this tradition, we're currently, today is Ash Wednesday, which is a start of Lent, which is, and Christy can correct me. She's the Episcopalian, but, it's 40 days from the start. And we're leading up to, essentially Easter. Yes. And all that comes with Holy Week and all of that. And then the day before is, depending on which islands you live on, Shrove Tuesday.
Shrove, yes.
Fat Tuesday, you know, Pancake Day, whatever. But it's kind of the day where you're quite gluttonous and wild before the 40 days. And usually in Lent, you during those 40 days, you give up something. Christy gave up everything.
There was
for her 40 days.
So the one thing I learned specifically during that one, when I only had water, is that it's 40 days, not including Sunday.
That's right. Yeah.
So on Sundays you get to have whatever it is you gave up, which meant that Sundays were kind of a very exciting day.
Which I don't think I did when I did Lent. Yeah. My friend, I have Reply Ireland. But one of my best friends, Ellen, grew up, she's a dairy girl, and she grew up in that world of 90s dairy Catholicism. And
yeah.
She could be a character on that show. Anyway, she taught me a lot about what Catholics actually do on Lent, and actually just in general. And I dated a guy from Northern Ireland as well, but Ellen really, you know, she was a proper church going girl, so she really gave me a good sort of rundown of the stuff, and we're not doing it right. Cause there's like fish on Friday stuff too. Like we're just really not
doing it.
We haven't hit it. And by we, I mean Protestants. Yeah. We haven't quite hit it. Yeah.
I do feel like, cause one time I asked like, what is the point of this? Right. And I remember whoever said it's, you're supposed to be opening up like, or giving something up in order to get closer to God. And I feel like that also made a big shift for me, because I was like, well, giving up coffee and whatnot, while maybe was for at least potentially good cause, did not do anything in terms of my feelings or relationship to God. Mm-hmm. And I think that also has maybe contributed to why I don't usually participate in Lent in the same way. Like, I try to think about like, what is, if I'm going to do something for Lent, it has to be something that actually is like a faith-based issue instead of like, I'll give up chocolate or.
Right.
You know?
No. And I think too, it's, I wonder if there's not a, cause I think growing up what I did, I wonder if there's not some sort of, it almost feels like we're appropriating. It's like a Catholic appropriation.
It does.
And, you know, and when she was telling me about stuff, I was like, I almost would rather, and I don't want to step on the Anglican's toes here, because I know it'll be a sore subject, but like, I'd rather do nothing almost than do it and not do it like the way that they, because it's not like Jesus said, give up stuff for 40 days. Like, you know, we have these rites and rituals that were created by communities of faith, and they're super important. They're a part of the life of the tradition, but like, it's not my tradition, you know? So like, if it's not my tradition, it does feel a little like I'm appropriating it just to feel like I'm doing something. I know Chrissy's gone again, which is a very inopportune time, but I kind of stand by that. Like, I still participate, and I like the richness that rituals give, and certainly the church calendar. I'm so happy when I'm ordained in the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, and they participate very fully in these kind of like designations. And so it was really a learning situation for me, but I really enjoyed it, and I appreciated the disciples' way of kind of going about it, because it felt like it wasn't like we're trying to be this thing, but it was very much, this is how the disciples of Christ do Lent. This is how they do, you know, X, Y, and Z on the church calendar. So it felt like it was something that was mine. I was saying I appreciated the way the disciples did it, because it felt like it was them doing their version of it. And they very actively acknowledge, because they pride themselves on the thinking bit, but like they said, you know we have, this isn't our tradition, but we're going to make it a version of our tradition because we like the system of the tradition, if that makes sense. And, but we know that like, we're not Catholic and we're not, I mean, you know, and that's, you know, that's the thing. So I was just saying before, I was saying that sometimes it feels, when she was telling me all this stuff, I was like, oh, there's three of you. Guys,
I know.
If you get through this podcast, it will be a miracle of Jesus.
I've given up on my laptop and I'm just using my phone now.
Right, but you're, know, there's two of you. So you,
I know, because I'm afraid of closing out the laptop completely. It's really weird. It's tripping me out a lot too. There's a lot of,
there's some feedback. So I think you should probably shut one of them.
Well, the,
your voice,
Your
voice is leveling up, if that makes sense.
Like, no, that makes sense. Hold on.
Cause there are two, this is what it would be like if,
there we go,
Christy and I were the Trinity.
If we were, oh my God, what if we were the Trinity? Okay. We've, We've sorted this out.
There's still three of you, but your voice is one now.
I'm not feedbacky anymore.
What was three is now one. Isn't that what you Trinitarian folks love to talk about? That makes total sense in a logical way.
Okay, you're disciples of Christ.
I am
indeed. I think that that makes sense because I agree. I have always felt like we're not doing it right. And also it is a bit appropriating, but there's still something important about it, I think. And trying to figure out how to kind of come at it theologically or in terms of faith without it just being like the Catholics have been doing this for a long time. We're going to do it too. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we do have communion at every service because we did appropriate the hell out of that real quick. we're not without stone throwing here, but I think actually that may be an interesting thing if we move away from sort of Lent even. What we're talking about rites and rituals, what do those sort of things mean for you in your current self? What is it that made you kind of want to participate in? Because Christy and I, we've talked, I go to quite a low ritual church. Christy is a part of a high ritual church, but I do, I'm interested to know like what that means to you in a way.
I think, and like a large part of why I switched over to high church is because I feel like when I'm struggling either emotionally or in faith or even just intellectually, going through rituals helps me feel like I'm still participating in something without having to necessarily be able to make it the whole way. Mm. It's almost like this way I feel like a little bit that notion that you can still be part of the team if you're injured. There's something kind of communal about it. And I really like the idea too that it's something that's been going on for a long time, kind of historical, because it feels like you're taking part in this larger picture instead of, again, it just being like, what do I feel today? Or how do I connect to something? Or what do I believe? Because all of those questions are really big. And sometimes you're just like, I can't go through that. I can't figure out what I think about all of these things. So the rituals help me in those moments. I also think I just really like tradition and history. You know, I think there's just something appealing about being part of something that's got traditions and and all that, you know.
I wonder if that's a little Americanness because we're so untethered when it comes to history in a way.
I think about this a lot because it's not necessarily just about like religious aspects. I think this kind of just in general, I love having traditions with people. I love the notion of like, oh, we do this thing all of the time, you know? And I think it has a lot to do with feeling like a very deep desire for connection and community. In historic ways too, you know, and I think that whole American individualism didn't work for me. I don't like it, like at all. And so this is a kind of a way of overcoming that in part.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. What about you?
I don't know. Because I didn't grow up with it and I never sort of felt that draw towards a high church. I here are things I appreciate. I appreciate the church calendar. And I appreciate knowing the traditions associated with the calendar. I do participate in Lent. I gave up coffee, which now feels, I was going to flex on that, but you gave up known to humanity. So
that never again. Feel like
quite a flex so much anymore, but it felt at the time a very intense.
It would feel that way today. There's no way I can manage.
Honestly, I will say it stands out in my mind because it was worse than dry January. Like, I'm by a cardinal mile, which makes me feel a little bit better and worse about myself both. But it sucked. I was working at Glasgow as a postdoc, and it was like, it just was a terrible time. I was drinking obscene. The Brits really sort of, speaking of ritual, they gravitate towards these stoppage times, though, just to use a soccer phrase, but it's these times where you get tea. So I remember in my postdoc, I would organize these conferences and they were like, well, where's the tea breaks? And I'm like, well, they can go and get coffee if they want to pee or whatever. Like, I wasn't a monster, but I was doing it at American stuff. They're like, no, that's too long. We need a tea break. And I'm like, do you though? Do we? So I found myself actually like very addicted to caffeine, and I was drinking it. And also, you work the hardest you ever worked when you're doing a postdoc. So like, mm-hmm. I was working with Heather, and I was just like, she'd be like, jump, and I'd be like, yes, ma'am, I need cappuccino. So I did it during that time, and it sucks. You know, do I think I got closer to God? No, I don't. Like, I mean, I think I realized stuff about myself, much like Dry January. Yeah. Like, I definitely realized my habits and things that weren't necessarily helpful, and maybe that could help me because it would make me recognize. But like, I don't think inherently I did that. I appreciate church calendar. I like the holidays. I like learning about Holy Week and doing. I love the disciples because when I first did my internship there, we did all the stuff, you know, and it was just like, I got to participate in all this stuff, and it was really a very great immersive learning experience. Now, that being said, the incense and the like stuff that you do, to me, I'm like, I get it. I get it from a, like, my front brain gets it.
Right.
I understand.
But it's not like.
But it's not, it doesn't do anything for me. Like, it doesn't really, like, now the shooting the glitter cannon at Mary would make me delighted, but I'm not sure that that's like a spiritual experience. So I think that's really an interesting question in a way is, like, at what stage does it become it goes from the front brain. Well, I always say front brain when I'm talking about my lot, like the sort of thinking brain, but like, when does it become a spiritual, like, thing? And I think for me, rituals have never really hit that. Even when I got baptized, I was just like, don't slip, don't fall. I was thinking the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe rituals and anxiety don't go together.
I mean that
genuinely.
Yeah. Well, cause like, I remember when I was graduating
from my dead cold hand RFK.
When I was graduating at Glasgow, and I had to walk up to the podium for them to like tap me on the head and declare me graduated. The whole time I was like, don't fall, don't fall, don't fall.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's it is interesting, especially because I think about too, like, you know, for me, a lot of times my faith or my participation in Christianity is very intellectual and not necessarily like emotional.
Mm.
And so when I talk about ritual appealing to my emotions and like to that feeling part of me, I think it's also my attempt to like, you know, reach back to that and not just be so intellectual about everything, you know, because it's like, at what point, and people ask this a lot, I think that's where the whole idea comes from of if you go to seminary you lose your faith or whatever, but like you know, how does faith still operate when you've made it your job, when you are studying so much, when you're engaging in like really deep work and you're like asking these big questions, like we talk about a lot with people. I remember when we were on Ryan Doe's podcast and he asked us, like, how do you continue to believe in God, or do you with all of this education? And it was like, yeah, it's a struggle sometimes, sometimes no. But I think that's also why ritual helps me, is because it's like, yeah, sometimes I'm like, I don't know
100% what
anything is, but at least I can go be part of this community still, you know?
I mean, there's something to be said about rituals drawing you in and away from that sort of intellectualism of academia, theology. You know, I was in an interview the other day for a job and they were like, you know, what do you do in the church? And I said, well, I do Bible studies around town and like, I'll, you know, I do preaching around town 100% and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at it and that's fine. But then my favorite time is just sitting. I have a church here in Charlotte Watershed, Total Props, 100% shout out, great church. And my favorite time is when I just get to go and sit in the back.
Yeah.
Be in church, you know? And like,
mm-hmm.
It does have the same, I mean, it's an independent church, so it has like, doesn't have like the sort of rituals that perhaps other high churches have, but it's good for me because it's enough of a consistency where it's like, okay, we're singing now. We're singing, and now we're sitting and we're praying.
Yeah.
And then the sermon's going to come, and then we're going to do this offering, and that, you know. So for me, I like a structure, maybe not a ritual, if that makes sense. So I don't mind.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
But yeah. I think removing myself from, which sucks because, and I want to say this to all my ministerial baddies out there. I think you have to sometimes just go to church.
Yes, I agree. I agree so much because it can get so overwhelming. I mean, like I said, like, ministers especially, because there's a whole different level of like you're helping other people emotionally, but like when it's your job, because like most people you're like, okay, I have finished working for the day and I'm gonna not think about work anymore. But what do you do when your work is also supposed to be a very, you know, particularly significant aspect of your life? Sometimes it can get really overwhelming. And you kind of just shove it to the side or shove it into this specific box or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in chaplain, they made us go to counseling, but when I was a minister, they did not make us go to church, which I thought
actually
was really interesting.
That is really interesting. When I was in seminary, they made us go to counseling. We had to do a certain amount of semesters of like structured counseling / guidance.
It's not my seminary, because you all know where I went. It wasn't the seminary, it was the placements. They required that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because most of it is like personal, like, how are you doing personally? But then one semester was like a professional one. Like, here's what you'd be doing professionally. And at first I really hated it because I don't really love acknowledging human emotions.
I'm bad at it too. I'm
like,
it's gonna shock no one, but I'm bad at it.
Yeah, like I don't want to talk about feelings most of the time. I told my students the other day, I said, you know, I'm going to be in my office all day if you want to come and talk, because they have midterms this week. I was like, if you have any questions or anything. And I was like, you know, you're trying to encourage them to come to office hours. So I'm like, I have a comfy chair you can sit in. I have a box of tissues if you start crying. And then I'm like, but please don't cry, because I don't know what to do when you're crying. Like, that's going to be awkward.
And there was a guy that was, we had to go through because they need to make sure you weren't crazy. And I say that very loosely because I don't know what their definition of that was. But anyway, they had a definition. I wasn't privy to it, but I had to sit with this man who I'd never met before. And we only did like a series of like 3 counseling sessions. And so I didn't pick him. And he talked to me. And I remember he said something, because he was like, he says, what's your relationship like with your mom? And then I said, like, and then he goes, oh, you made a stutter step when you talked about your mom. And I was like, I love my mom. Like, it's just, it's not, what do you mean? I made a stutter step because you brought up my mom.
Yeah.
My mom's name was in your mouth, and I don't know who you are. So I got aggro about it. And hey, I got through the process, but I don't know how sometimes.
I got through the process. My counselor told me at one point, she said, I think that you only do this because you know it's a grade, and like your desire for a good grade is forcing you to do the counseling thing. And I was like, 100% that is accurate. If you weren't grading this, I would not be here. And she was like, you need to also, and I was like, I get it. I know I need this. I'm aware. I just don't want to.
I will say that it's like the Robinson Gibb household is very pro counseling, because we are.
Oh, very. I'm very pro it.
But like,
I have been.
But this is not what that was. Like, I didn't choose that man, and I didn't have sessions. Like, I had it was very orchestrated, the sort of situation. Yes. Like,
yeah.
So I think that
I have since also been in there. It's great. We're all very pro it. But the same thing, this was very orchestrated, it was very specific, and it was like, but it was also the first time I'd ever been to counseling. I think it was actually really good for me, because I don't know that I would have been able to do counseling if I hadn't experienced it and like known it does help. I don't know that I ever would have done it by myself.
So Christy, how do you feel right now?
I feel a little tipsy because
this hurricane went down.
Which, okay, so I was, oh shit, now I was going to tell you something else. But no, oh, but I was going to say.
Yep, this is exactly
what I'm saying. This is what's happening. There's so many shots of rum in this thing.
Yeah.
I think that when we first started this, it's made its way back to the front part of my brain. We had to do these personality tests, and then you had to meet with a counselor specifically just to go over your personality test. I've had to take so many of these personality tests. If you're like, do you know? I know all of the things, but
ELDP, what's that one?
The Myers-Briggs. I'm an ENTP. I had to take that one at work once. We had to do the Enneagram. I'm a 7.
Enneagram. I feel like I'd aged out. Or sorry, it was, yeah, whatever. It was.
I'm a 7. I was declared a 7 by several people before I took the test. But we had to take this. It was a totally different test. And we met with this counselor, and this man said to me, "You don't really like emotions, do you?" And I was like, not so much. And he said, "Do you have a hard time keeping friends?" And I was like, no. Like, he was just assuming a whole lot. And then he said, "But do you like them?" And I was like,
"Your friends? Do you like
yes. friends?" No, because he was just like,
I keep them around for nefarious
purposes. I think this man thought I was some kind of sociopath or something. He was like, "You have no emotional range." And I was like, I am okay. It's fine. He then told me that I'm not suited for a job.
Well, you did tell me this. You told me this. And I was like, well, I'd be okay with it but you need you need to be suited for a wealthy benefactor as well.
I know. He goes, "You need to be like freelance or something." And I said, "I need to pay my bills."
Me and freelance for like, what? Like
freelance, just find a freelance thing? No, sir. Look.
What does that mean?
Like, firstly,
Antarctica with the penguins or something, like, where are you
going? Right, yeah, it was a trip of a session. But
okay, here's one thing to bring us back is which is weird because I don't know how that's happening, but is what does get me when with rituals and sort of tradition is churches. So I get real, like, I can get emotional about space.
Oh, okay.
Like, it doesn't have to be, like, actions, because actions, I kind of, like, I think I go through, because I participate so much in church, I go through things of, like, just not wanting to necessarily participate, or I do, and then people, and, like, it's a lot of social stuff. Mm. I'm very social in the not church life. But I will say a good space, like, and it doesn't have to be, like, a huge cathedral, although we'll say Sagrada Familia is, like, destroyed me. But I think a good, like, space is just the church that I go
churches
to. Charlotte is a old gymnasium because it's a school, but they've like blacked it out and they've got like really pretty candles and like very dark and kind of moody but also together, and it means that you can disappear but also hug someone at the same time, which I appreciate.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I like a
space. I also agree with that. I feel like this is where also I appreciate, again, I really like this idea of being connected throughout history and time and stuff. And space, I think, has a big part of that. Because, like, you know that people have been here doing this thing, worshiping whatever for so long. You can feel a sense of that connection and that emotion. One of the times that I got the most emotional was visiting a stone circle in Avebury in England, which... like, is it, you know, ancient, like Stonehenge, but more run down? And it's actually pretty close. My friend Don and I went on a little trip to Bath and then and over to these, like, we did a, like, bus tour of Stonehenge and then Avebury. Stonehenge is very, like, touristy, right? Like, it's roped off. You can't go touch the stones or anything. But Avebury, the stones are just in the middle of the village and they're just kind of there. So you can just, like, walk around. So I was like, you know, in the height of my Outlander phase. And so I was like,
take me
to Jamie Fraser, please. Yeah. But the night before had been some kind of festival. So there were like remnants of the festival there. And I just was like walking around thinking, like, not just ancient people have been seeing this as a sacred space, but like it's still happening. And it was like this very profound kind of moment. But I think that spaces, again, like you're connecting somehow to other people in that.
Yeah, like Rosalind Chapel, as people I brought up earlier, Dan Brown.
Yeah.
But it is actually that I had that moment in there too. I think there's just something, I think maybe that's my equivalent of rituals,
yeah.
The space in a way is like being in a space where you feel like, yeah, like if something's happened or something's old, I do like that very much. I've been to Stone Aaron, the Isle of Aaron, went to Stone earlier, and I got to touch them. Yeah. A picture of me doing the like full, like, I'm sure it's super not good for them, for me to.
Also, I'm honestly surprised they let you touch them.
Yeah, well, it was in a field.
Like, I mean, yeah, like say, like I said, say it's just in the middle of the village, but still.
Well, yeah, I like, probably like as someone who studies history, guys, I shouldn't have. Let me PSA this: I shouldn't have touched them, but I did. I didn't think I was with Stuart, so I didn't necessarily think that another Scottish man was going to like zap me away to another land. I felt like I did the picture anyway, so we're gonna do that. I'm still American, guys. We're still American. Okay, most emotional ritual that you've been through. So what is a ritual that brought you to feelings of intenseness?
Yeah. Oh, let me think. I can honestly, you don't have to. Yeah, you go first because I have to think about this.
I did when I was doing my PhD, I went to Clonard Monastery, which is on the Falls Road in Belfast, and they did a full service there, and Father Reynolds was doing it, and it was a Catholic service, which I haven't been to a bunch of, but there was just, it was simple and it was to the point. And Jerry Reynolds is, if you don't know him, like you won't know him actually, but he's a brilliant mind, worked tirelessly for a cause in his community and is not famous at all, but incredibly intelligent human. I was very, very blessed to get to know him, but he did this sermon and it was something about, again, the space, and it was something about what he was saying at the time. It was a little feely, you know, peace building, reconciliation stuff, but it just hit. I know now that I think sermons hit in a way. I think that's alongside the space. I would say if you've got space and like a good sermon, you're getting me on the emotional side and the front brain side, and you combine those two together and I'm like,
yes,
I'm into it and I'm here. Mm-hmm. And so he did that. And then I will say there was two, because I'm mute right now. The second,
you can have three if you want.
Our podcast. Screw the world. there was I went on an Easter service to Plaza Presbyterian. It was Presbyterian USA church that is now a community arts center here in Charlotte. And, but back then it was church, and I went with Stuart, and they had the church itself was fine. I mean, it was very angular. I find Presbyterian churches to be very angular.
They are.
They don't want to get too comfortable, right? But they had a minister that came in that gave a sermon that I've learned later is not a new sermon to give, but it was the first time I'd heard it, and it was about this idea that the unnamed disciple at the tomb was Lazarus, and that the reason he didn't want to go into the tomb was because he had been in a tomb and it was very scary to him. And just like, there was something about the way she crafted it though that was so emotional, and like not emotional in the way that you think, but it was just like, because I knew the story and I knew the background and I knew the weirdness of calling someone who had such an important role an unnamed disciple, and you know, this idea that he was scared to go in because he had died and he'd been in there. And
I mean,
there was just something that hit. So like I said,
yeah,
space and sermon is the perfect, but you give me a good sermon and I'm there for it.
I mean, do you give me a good, like a good space, a good ritual, and then pair it with just the right story.
Oh yeah.
And I'm basically just a puddle on the floor. Like those are all of the ways to make me
feel the most, I think, connected. I honestly, I can't think of like a specific one ritual. I can think of ones though that have kind of built over time for me. And mostly it's like rituals, partly communion. And specifically, usually it's when, again, when I'm in one of those head spaces where I'm not necessarily, feeling very connected, you know, mm-hmm. and then participating in the communion, I can, there's a way of unlocking some of that emotion. But also, and I know I talked about this because I was like looking back on our Easter episode from last year, and I know I mentioned it, but the Good Friday service is always, mm-hmm. I think, regardless of what denomination I have been in, and pretty consistently throughout my life, going to Good Friday service has always been very emotional for me. You know, I think that it's one of those times when it like really, it forces you to sit back and quietly reflect in a way that we don't usually do currently because we're so on the go and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I think about not just the times at St. Mary's where we would leave in silence, like earlier when I was still going to primarily evangelical churches. It's still this kind of darkness, you know, like you and I, we don't really like a lot of light, right? We're here in our caves, but it's like that darkness sitting in the kind of darker church than usual, somberness, none of the like happy, uplifting songs are happening and stuff. They're using all the minor keys on the piano. I think this is also why O Come, O Come, Emmanuel is my favorite Christmas song, is because it's like the dark, sad one.
It really is. You're right.
But like, yeah, I think it's those. It's the just forcing me to stop, to sit and be quiet and like reflect. Yeah.
My granddad, yeah. They used to, in my town, because we had a local television station. All you guys that love Wayne's World will know what those stations are like. But they would do our Good Friday service on the local cable access. Mm-hmm. And I for many years was the child getting read a story about Jesus's life and death in a couch that they put on, or a chair that they put on the top stage. I got in trouble for saying stage one time. of the
church. But it is.
But yeah. It is. Let's be real. And he would read me the story, and then they would act out like this thing on the cross in the background. Like it was, like I said, when they did it right. And I have a Polaroid that I'm guessing my mom took of a TV with us on the TV and him reading the story. Yeah, it was really sweet. So, I mean,
I love that.
Yeah. I think it definitely has its place.
Yeah,
we're at 109. Do you want to keep? No,
oh, yeah.
What were we going to say?
I just was going to say, I think that, like I said, I think that these kinds of things where we're feeling our connections, regardless of how that happens, I think that's what point is, you know?
If I could bring in like one ritual that I learned mm-hmm. in Ireland, what I learned in Catholicism in Ireland would be the visiting of the graves. It's my favorite ritual of all time, of anything, I will say, even more than communion or sermons or spaces, is I love taking one year or one day out of the year. And of course I'm a spooky gal, but like just participating in that in Ireland and people taking like drinks and stuff out and like us just sitting around and like visiting the grave, and you get remembered.
I love that.
For forever. And you teach
the I love that.
You never met, like my grand, if I was to have a kid, they don't know my grandparents, but I tell them the stories of grandparents and then they keep it going, and like it's just
I
freaking love that ritual, and it doesn't hurt anybody. It's
not
Catholic, it's not Protestant.
I love that.
It's just remembering. It's lovely.
I love that so much, because one of the things that I've become increasingly kind of wanting or jealous of, I guess, is the Mexican ritual of the Day of the Dead.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. That is the Irish
equivalent. I mean, that's, yeah, it's just the Irish equivalent. Like, yeah, I, for the past couple of years, I have basically been like, through my friend Sandra, who's Mexican, been like, how can I also do this without just co-opting or appropriating it? But like, because I love it. I think it's such a, you have to remember. You have to sit and remember.
It destroys me, but I think
it's great. We're going to go to the graves, Leah, you and me.
I have my friend, we have, it sounds like we're like Republicans. I also have my Mexican friend too, who go to where he lives in, I think it's, I'm getting confused because I know there's a Pueblo, but I think it is Pueblo as well in Mexico.
It's Puebla.
Puebla, there you go.
Yes, Puebla.
And
that's
and I was like, take me the day of the death. You know, I want,
yes,
I want to see everything. But like, if I could also do that, it would be amazing.
I know, that would be so fun. Yeah. I started a kind of annual tradition of watching Coco too.
Yes.
It's just so sweet. And then I cry a lot. And it's, yeah, there are a few things that make me cry a lot, but that movie is one of them.
Well, guys, yeah, we didn't cry in this episode.
We did not, but.
Although I have.
Whew. I am. Oops.
What time is it? Because Stuart is hopefully off work because he's going to have to entertain me for the next. Yep. Close enough.
Y'all, this was a good time with some rum. And that is, you know what?
That is a dangerous drink, y'all, if you do drink it.
It's a good drink, but it was dangerous. And we're good Mardi Gras for us on Ash Wednesday.
On Ash Wednesday. From ashes you came, from ash you shall return. So I gave you all your crosses now.
Thank you.
And then you're very welcome. And next week we'll be back again and we'll talk about some
more. We'll be back.
Maybe tell you about my
Hopefully we'll both be back the whole time.
Honestly, it's kind of a fun challenge, like an improv challenge. I was a theater major at one stage. Which will again shock no one.
It's a testament to our teaching skills.
Correct.
It's a good time.
Someone asked me a question and I'm like, oh. You think about that.
Yeah. Why do you tell me what it is? Why don't you
tell me about that? All right. Well, yeah, we will see you later. And
Go. Just one final thing is that tickets are available and information is available for Theology Beer Camp, which is in Minnesota in October. And we posted stuff on our Instagram, so just take a look at that. There you go.
Way back for Miami right now.
I've never been to Minnesota, and I have always said that I did not want to go. So this is,
we'll see.
I
watched Love Is Blind, and they seem to make it because it's set in Twin Cities, and it seems they all know each other, so it feels like it's maybe a big town, small town. Don't know.
I think that's the vibe I'm getting. Yeah.
So, and also, we'll be wearing so many layers that you will not recognize me. But
we're gonna freeze, and then we have to go to Boston for AAR. So it's just gonna be a real freeze, though. It's gonna be a real time for the two of us next fall. But you know what? Pray for us. Keep on the lookout for semi-pornographic leering monkey lamps.
Oh my god, I cannot wait to see what we get back from that. But we're gonna start our book group. We've decided
to
do it. Our band book group. And maybe we will start next month. Maybe?
Yeah. Be on the lookout for that starting next month. Yeah.
And it'll be a Patreon
or sometime.
And
yes,
join us and we'll do live book groups. And
it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe send us suggestions of what the first book should be. Although we're leaning very heavy into 1984 right now.
We really are. It's a real strong possibility.
All right. Bye, y'all.
All right. See y'all. Bye. Oh, wait.